always lying to myself about my expectations. I'm aware I'm a crier, and I know all this crying doesn't help the situation.
It is time for Talkin' Music on your Mountain Grown Community radio station, KVNF. I am your host, Taya J. I am joined today on the show by the chronically tender queer folk artist, Liv Green, celebrating the release of her sophomore album, Deep Feeler. Liv, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on. So glad to be here today.
Such a pleasure to have you. What does a deep feeler mean to you?
So Deep Feeler, the title of the record, kind of came out of the title track. And when I was writing that, my friend Olivia Barton had a song with a lyric about being a deep feeler in it. And it was just kind of a verse lyric. And I just kept coming back to it in my head, almost like a mantra, and was just thinking to myself about how much I identified in that way, in the sense of always being kind of the one who's the first to fall, the first to feel things a little more intensely. I am a hypersensitive person. I have ADHD, which one of the main markers in women is like hypersensitivity.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's something I discovered later in life, but gave me a lot of self-compassion for academic struggles and just like a lot of shame spirals I'd be in about talking too much, being too emotional, being late, being disorganized, stuff that I couldn't help even though I was trying really hard. One of those was that emotionality, and deep feelers always just kind of Once I heard that phrase, it just kind of stuck and ended up kind of becoming the mantra of the whole batch of songs.
So it sounds to me like you've always been a deep feeler, but I think we all go through journeys with our relationship to admitting that we're deep feelers. I certainly know as a fellow deep feeler that I have gone through lots of trials and tribulations with just acknowledging what it is to be a sensitive person, and that sometimes there's this sort of negative connotation, I feel like, socially, culturally, around being deeply feeling. And it's sort of, I think, a journey, right, to get to a place where you can really claim that with confidence and with commitment.
Definitely. I think the queerness element for this record in particular, and that's not going to obviously apply to everyone, but when I was writing these songs, it really felt like a coming of age in that, like, I was accepting my queerness and my queer emotions and feelings for the first time. And so, like, allowing myself to date women or to date queer people and, like, not feel shame. I grew up super Catholic, and for all the good that it did, it also made it really hard for me to accept the way that I am wired. And so all these songs are kind of written about just like my early experiences in dating, where I was really allowing myself to feel things completely. I like kind of came out during the pandemic and all that, sitting with myself. And so the bulk of the record was written in the time after coming out, when I was like, it felt like life was new again, in the sense of like how intensely the emotions felt with dating. And so realizing I was the common denominator in a lot of different situations, and then being like, okay, maybe this is something about me that makes it both a beautiful thing in romantic relationships, but also a little bit complicated at times when I'm projecting. It can be a little delusional at times when I'm like projecting into the future or like feeling deeply for someone who I don't quite know yet.
So it sounds to me like embracing that aspect of your identity has really sort of cracked you open. Do you feel like being a queer artist informs the art that you make, and vice versa? Do you feel like the art that you make informs your identity?
Absolutely. I think one of the main things about this record was it being more personal than anything I've ever made, in that I was really accepting myself over the course of writing it. So I think it was more confessional writing than I'd ever done before, more so than craft focused. Obviously, I was focused on the craft as well, but the number one thing I was doing when I was sitting down to write it was trying to listen to myself and be kind of in communion with whatever I was feeling, rather than what would the best next line be, or like, oh, what should the story do next? It was very like, it was very therapeutic in the way that I was writing it. So I feel like the self-discovery and the self-love and the queerness themes just are innately part of it because of that.
I am buying myself flowers these days. Spend too much of my money on a yellow rose bouquet to put on my windowsill, my new empty space to fill. I am buying myself flowers these days. I am buying myself wine to drink alone, two buck chuck Cabernet Sauvignon. Today I found our so I know what I need to do. I am buying myself wine to drink alone. I'm a 21st century woman who's crying like a little child, wearing my poor heart on my shopping cart in the frozen food aisle. And I don't know what the hell I'm doing, spending my heart. Still so pissed that you got to leave. had a change of scenery. I am buying massive ticket for the train. I'm a 21st century woman who's crying like a little child at the same train station where we cheat the turnstile. And I don't know what the hell I'm doing, spending my miss you anymore. I am buying myself fresh cotton sheets. Got a low thread count, but the price is pretty sweet. See, I got to hold on to our set, and they won't let me forget. So I am buying my fresh cotton sheets. Got to hold on to our corkscrew, but I couldn't hold on to you. So I am buying myself one, buying myself time, giving myself space, little love.
That's Liv Green with Flowers off her sophomore album, Deep Feeler. Liv joining me on Talkin' Music today. Why writing as a medium? Why songwriting?
I think my favorite way to write is through improvisation. And so it really does create kind of a vessel for, it's like journaling. And I know that that's a very common thing. It's a huge part of a lot of the ways people write songs. That kind of like confessional thing that maybe people like Joni Mitchell pioneered in like the folk revival. But yeah, I think just the improvisatory nature of it, of like sitting down and like playing some chords and letting whatever comes out come out, really allows you to just, if you're doing it right, hopefully like be open to whatever is bubbling up in your brain. And that leads to a lot of bad songs that I will never share, but it also leads to some that feel really true, in that it makes it a lot easier when you're doing like promotion of music and have to play the same song over and over again, like if it feels like it's true.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I was just talking to a writer the other day who talked about sort of all of those, in the audio world, you call it killing your darlings, taking all those things that are never going to see the light of day and putting them away somewhere. And she talked a lot, this particular writer talked a lot about timing playing a really huge role in that too, that sometimes the feelings that are not quite it at the time, you put those away somewhere, and then 10 years from now, they might have grown a little, you know, they might have had time to kind of incubate and come into their own stride, and you might then have a different relationship to them too. And I think that's an interesting aspect of the creative process.
Totally, totally. I know around the time I wrote Deep Feeler, for example, that song, I was feeling it in one way. And then a full year later, it was like almost an identical situation that I was coming out of. And when I recorded it in the studio, and just feeling like this is ridiculous and hilarious that like it's resonating in a new way. Or one of the songs on the record halfway out was like, I wrote it about my roommate and something they were going through. And then I related to it a little bit later. So I love that about songs. They're just kind of little, they're like sweaters or hats or whatever. You can try them on for a million different facets, for the necessary warmth or for the color or the style, and they're gonna fit in different ways a million times over.
I've never heard a song referred to as a sweater or a hat. I love it.
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling the cold weather these days.
That's a seasonal analogy.
Yeah. I like to think ideally that my music at least can, yeah, have like a blanket quality in this season, like if anything else. Yeah, that would be my dream, is to be sweater or blanket like in the music.
I love that. I love that too, because it's kind of like you put it on when you need it, you take it off when you don't, you revisit it as the weather changes, as the situation changes. I think that's a really beautiful analogy.
Thank you.
let's talk a little bit more about the record. If you had to distill down the quality of the record, what would you say it is?
The quality. I would say it's very raw, and it's very tender. I would say it was made mainly on tape here in Nashville, at Woodland Studios with one of my heroes, Matt Andrews, engineering it. And he was doing it, the majority of the record was completely live to tape. There were a couple instruments overdubbed, but like all of the vocal performances and guitar performances and the bulk of the band was just like totally live. So yeah, it has a really like raw present moment quality to it because of that. And I think that made it harder for me as a producer in a sense of like not wanting to edit myself, like feeling like, ah, my vocal is just a little too human there. But I think that I'm hoping that translates in the music as like feeling like a real moment. And then the tenderness quality, I think, has a lot to do with just the subject matter and the vocal delivery. I think that so much of my vocal inspiration are artists that like have this really soft kind of place in how they deliver what they're delivering, like artists like both the singers in Watch House or Ifo Donovan or Sarah Jarosz, just people who like really have this softness that kind of draws you in. So I think tender and raw are the qualities I would kind of ascribe to it.
I love that. And I don't want to speak for our culture entirely, but I do think that there is a trend towards craving more tender and raw, more of those authentic moments and less of the polished, more of the human moments. I am really curious about this idea of live to tape as a way of embracing imperfection a little bit. And I'm wondering if you'll speak a little bit more of why you chose to record this album live to tape and what your relationship is to perfection or imperfection.
I love that question. I think I want to start with the perfection aspect first, in that immediately when you said that, I was just thinking about like the phrase having been raised as a girl, because that like comes up in my head a lot when I'm doing these kind of interviews, because it just feels like a very important part of like why I do things the way I do them nowadays, that I've kind of come to a point of being like, no, I refuse to let the programming I had as a kid like influence the way that I move through my life as an artist, as a person, if it's going to limit me. And so I think a lot of being raised as a girl, like you're taught to be quiet or to be perfect. Like when you open your mouth, when you raise your hand in class, like there's an element of like, okay, don't mess up in front of people, especially if you're like, for me, I went to a music college in Boston called New England Conservatory that was really amazing, but super put me out of my comfort zone, as it should have. And there were times when I would be like the only woman in an ensemble, like a jazz ensemble, the only woman instrumentalist, like playing guitar around all these men jazz majors, and just feeling like there was a microscope on me because of being one of the only other folks there. And so just feeling like I wasn't allowed to mess up. And so I think as I've gotten older, I've just felt this like anger and resentment towards perfectionism, or like my own limiting myself, because I'm like, oh, I'm afraid to learn a new skill because like everyone's already so good at it. Or when it comes to production, I just felt like, oh, like there are so many other producers already in this town, and like I'm not going to be perfect at it, so why should I do that? But I think that the way that we learn is through messing up, and girls and women are not often encouraged to like be imperfect loudly. And so that was definitely a huge part of like deciding to produce it myself. And I think that tape as a producerial choice had part to do with that, but also just to do with like all the music that I most resonate with. My hero, Matt, who engineered it, he, hearing like the stuff he does with Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings, and like, it feels like almost cinematic the way that he engineers it. Like, it feels like you're in the room with them, or like you're watching a movie. And it's nothing more than like a real life performance of the two of them in a magic kind of moment of like being in the song and in the performance. And so that kind of music always has moved me the most, whether like there are moments that feel a little more human or not. And I think that's part of it, is it feels like a picture more so than a edited image. It feels like there's no kind of filter on it. So that element really inspired me in terms of making that choice to work with him.
Appreciate you sharing that. While you were talking about it, I was thinking about almost this idea that I think as young girls, we are told that there's a finite amount of time or space and that we need to utilize it well. Like we need to show up as the perfect version of ourselves if we're going to deign to take up that space. If we're going to occupy the little bit that we are given, we need to do it perfectly.
Totally. Absolutely. I think fertility timelines are like something that women and girls and like this pressure to be a wife and be a mother, like people talk about them a lot. Yes, artists talk about them a lot, but because we have to, like we should, because even if you didn't grow up in a really religious community or one that like really pushes that in the forefront, those are the subliminal messages of our culture and those pressures that we feel that people that were not raised like us maybe don't feel. And so I definitely feel a lot of push to like buck against that as much as I can in terms of, yeah, I'm going to start something new when I'm older. Like heroes like mine, like Mary Gaucher, she didn't write her first song until she was 35. And that's like so incredible to me just because, yeah, we don't, as women, we don't expire when we like aren't fertile age anymore. Like that's so ridiculous. And there's such a pressure on youth and aesthetic and all of this, especially more and more with social media. So yeah, I feel that deeply.
Who are some of your tried and true musical companions?
My biggest one throughout all different phases of my life has probably been, well, split between Patty Griffin and Lucinda Williams. I feel really lucky that my parents, they were huge Americana fans, and so they would like go to shows and bring home the CD of both the headliner and the opener. And so I got exposed to so much good music, including Patty Griffin and Lucinda. And so like her record, Living With Ghosts, Patty's in particular, and then Car Wheels by Lucinda were like huge kind of soundtracks to when I was younger. And then as I got older and kind of fell in love with the kind of music I make now, they were really like roadmaps for me to come back. And not only were they like the first songs I learned on guitar, but they were kind of the first ones I looked to when I was learning how to songwrite years later. And also learning how to produce and just wanting to have music to feel really like song-centered and guitar and vocal-centric. And then in terms of nowadays, my favorite band recently is Bonnie Light Horseman, as well as Big Thief. Those are like two of my kind of North Stars in terms of like all really incredible musicians coming together, like in their own right, coming together in a super group way that doesn't feel contrived at all. Like it just feels like a genuine, like they become an organism of music in the way that they collaborate, and I just like admire that so much. And so they've put out some of my favorite band records recently.
Do you have a favorite track on the record right now?
That's a good question. I think, yeah, it changes a lot. In the past it's been Wild Geese. Recently it's a tie between It Ain't Dead Yet and I Can Be Grateful on the second half of the record. Yeah, I'd say it's split between those two at the moment.
How do you want people to experience the record? Is your hope that someone might sit down with it and listen to it from start to finish, that they might take it on a road trip with them, that they might listen to it in their headphones while they're walking in nature? What's the vision for you?
I definitely feel like I made the record for vinyl. But I was talking to a friend the other day about like our ideal listener and how like impossible that is, because even my friend and I who were talking, who are like big music fans and musicians and like it's our whole world, the chances of us listening to a new record on vinyl from start to finish as our first like impression is like probably a 0% chance, just because like that's not how nowadays people, when they buy music, they already love it, or they already love like the set they heard for the most part. Back in the day, you would often, record stores would have like a way to listen to it, maybe like a little listening station, and then you'd buy it. But, or even just on iTunes, you'd have the minute long preview before you bought it. And so by the time you listen to the whole piece, like, you know, A side, B side, all the way through, you already had this investment in it, in the sense of like you owned a physical version of it, and you had spent money on it. And so yeah, I definitely made it for like maybe an older framework, in the sense of like, I love the idea of someone listening to it from like start to finish in one sitting as like their first impression, and then maybe coming back to little songs here and there that resonate. But I'm hoping that it has the widest reach possible in terms of like maybe you'll hear something on like the Spotify algorithm or on the radio and be like, oh, I like this and I like the vibe of it, and maybe it won't even have an emotional impact. Or maybe you're someone who like, you know, listens to it and then it moves you emotionally and then you go listen to the whole thing. Honestly, I feel really grateful just for anyone to listen to it at all. And I guess my hope is intentional listening, but grateful for anybody who listens in any capacity, because it's really hard these days. There's just so much music. There's an insane amount of music. And so any little bit of listening just feels really wonderful. I'm grateful.
Mm-hmm. Liv, do you think we're all deep feelers?
I think so. And I think if more people embrace that, our world would be a little bit better. Yeah, I think everybody, there's definitely like medical or psychological exceptions, but I like to think that everybody feels things deeply if they allow themselves to, and that if we listen to ourselves more than any religious organization or external influence, if we just like listen to our own desires and our own emotional reactions to things and sat with them more, that it would lead to a more beautiful, diverse in every possible way, world of possibilities.
Nicely said. Liv Green, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Wild geese are gonna fly. Wild geese are gonna fly.